welcome into our 50th episode of the Love of the Mouse podcast. I'm so excited to have finally hit this milestone. It's been a 3.5 year journey at this point, but we finally made it. I'm your host, Matt Merlino, and today we have probably our most exciting episode that we've ever been able to bring to you. I am just absolutely thrilled to be able to bring this episode. It's been something I never thought would actually be possible for the show, and it's just so incredible that it's actually happening. How it came to fruition is just so incredibly crazy. But today I'm going to be joined by Brett Iwin, the official voice of Mickey Mouse. He's been voicing Mickey Mouse since 2009, and to this day he's the voice all across the world. I was able to talk with him a few months ago, so it's been on the back burner. I was really waiting to have this episode as our special 50th episode spectacular. It's been such an awesome build-up for this show, and I've kept it under wraps. And you may have heard at the end of our last episode, episode 49 part 2, where I announced that it was going to be Mr. Iwin joining me, because I have kind of teased it a little bit in the past, but I'm just so excited that I'm finally able to bring this interview to you after a few short months that felt very, very long, because I've been so excited for this episode to release. So it was an awesome conversation. Mr. Iwin was so incredible to speak with, and I'm just so happy and excited for where the podcast started to where it's now at episode 50, and being able to speak with somebody of Mr. Iwin's caliber and just how much happiness he brings to so many people with his voice is something that I really did never think would be possible to bring to you on this podcast as well. So before we dive into the actual interview, I do want to remind everybody that you can follow us on all of our social media platforms. That's Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, Twitter, and YouTube by searching Love of the Mouse Multimedia or at LOTM Multimedia on all platforms. You can also connect with us on our website, loveofthemousepodcast.com, and there you can listen to all of our previous episodes. Also, this episode will be available on our YouTube channel. This will be our first official YouTube video on our channel, because we've really been waiting for something awesome to make our first video. So this interview is going to be a multimedia experience in itself. We will cover it on the podcast, obviously, as you're listening to this. We will also post it on YouTube as well as on our website, so that if you are interested in watching this rather than listening, that is an option as well. And if you are listening on iTunes or any of your favorite podcast apps, please make sure to subscribe as well as leave a rating and review if you are enjoying what you're hearing. Make sure to leave that rating, because that does help our show grow even more. That's how we become found on those different platforms. So if you haven't done so already, please consider leaving a rating, especially if you're enjoying this episode in particular. If these are the kind of things that our listeners like hearing, we absolutely want to try to bring more interviews and more Disney-specific guests onto the show. So please consider doing that if you haven't done so already. So without further ado, I am so incredibly excited to finally bring this interview with Mr. Iwin to all of you. Thank you for listening to the Love of the Mouse podcast. I hope we can do so many more episodes like this. This is only episode 50, but we're shooting for the next 50. Thank you again for listening. We hope you enjoy. So today for our episode, this is our 50th episode spectacular. I am so thrilled to even have this come to fruition. I never thought this was going to be possible for the podcast or Love of the Mouse in general, but I am so fortunate to have a guest on today who literally and physically embodies Love of the Mouse, Mr. Brett Iwin, the official voice of Mickey Mouse. So thank you so much for coming on and speaking with me today.
Well, it's my pleasure. It only makes sense that a podcast named For the Love of the Mouse should have the mouse on here. So from me and Mickey, it's my pleasure to be here, pal.
Oh, wow. That's so spectacular. I love it. And I'm sorry if I start geeking out.
I really apologize. It's just like, this is so crazy for me.
Hey, I always say around me, it's a safe place because I'm one of the biggest geeks you'll ever meet. So no awesome. Judgment here.
Awesome. So I guess we'll just start off right off the bat. How did you become the voice of Mickey Mouse when your background started as an illustrator for Hallmark?
Not the typical route, but the longer I've done this job, I've realized that there really is no typical route for voice acting or acting or anything in entertainment. You know, everyone's got a unique story. Mine just happens to start with going to school for illustration, and then getting a job at Hallmark greeting cards. And, really the thing that kind of was the catalyst to my introduction into this world was my friend, Jamie, who I went to school with, who's now a Pixar animator, but worked at Pixar since 2004 when we graduated. She got the internal email that was circulated by the company explaining they were looking for an understudy to the voice of Mickey Mouse, who at that point in 2009 was Wayne Allwine. He had been doing it 32 years. He's the voice I grew up with other than Walt and Jimmy. But, you know, Wayne was the guy who did more work than any of them combined at that point. He was having some difficulties due to health, and so he wasn't able to sustain the falsetto as well as he had been. And that's when the company decided, you know what, maybe it's a good time to start exploring the idea of an understudy for Wayne. And they came up with this process. They had gone, you know, in voiceover, you typically go through different agencies. You put out a casting call, the agents get the info, all of their clients submit. And they had done that, but they weren't really finding what they were looking for. It was kind of a mix of people just didn't sound right. Also, there was this respect amongst the members of the community where they knew Wayne, and they didn't want to step on any toes. And so, you know, maybe not everybody submitted that could have. Either way, they hadn't found what they were looking for. And so at that point, the vice president of Disney Character Voices, which is the department at Disney that kind of oversees character consistency and integrity in terms of the voices. They're the ones responsible for everything domestically, but internationally as well. You know, they make sure that when a character sounds one way as voiced by this actor in the movie, that they do whatever they can to get that actor to portray them in a toy. And if they can't get that actor to do it, then they're going to find somebody who sounds as close as possible so that, you know, whether you're at the theme parks or you're in the aisle at Target, toy aisle at Target, you hear the same thing. And they really pride themselves in that, because Disney is one of the first studios to actually give that consideration. You know, they were founded by Roy Disney at a time when he decided, you know, look, there was like, you know, multiple people doing whatever character. If you went to Disneyland, it may have been one guy voicing Mickey and Goofy and Donald for the parades. And then, you know, you watch on ABC special and it's somebody else doing their impression. And so they were launching the Disney Channel in the 80s. And they said, you know what, now we have this vehicle where people are going to be tuning in and they have access to our content. We need to make sure that when they listen to Mickey, my dog's barking in the background. Hope you can't hear that.
No problem.
When they turn on the Disney Channel, they wanted you to hear the Mickey that you would hear at the park. Anyway, this is digressing from, I'm getting away from my story, but that's why Disney Character Voices kind of exists, for that purpose of making sure the character sounds the same regardless of where you're hearing them. So that department decided, well, you know what, we haven't found anybody via agencies. The history of Mickey is there, you know, had been three official voices at that point, and they were all people that had worked at the studio. So Walt Disney being the first, Jimmy McDonald was the sound effects guru, sound engineer guy on the studio lot. He took over the voice of Mickey when Walt literally said, I'm too busy, call Jimmy. And then Wayne Allwine was the third voice, and he happened to be Jimmy's apprentice in the sound effects department, amongst other things. He started his career at the Disney studios in the mailroom and had various jobs, but they said, look, the history of Mickey's voice has kind of come up for the studios. Let's see if somebody internally is capable of filling these shoes. So they sent out this internal email to the Pixar folks as well. And that's when my friend got it. She sent me the email knowing that I was a huge Disney and Mickey fan. You know, it, anyone who knew me at that point knew that I loved Mickey, that I loved Disney, that it was my dream to work for Disney. And she sent me this email that said, "Do you want to be the voice of Mickey Mouse?" That was the subject line. And all she wrote was, "You have to do this." And then it was all the instructions underneath. And so that's how I learned about the audition process. I, you know, freaked out. It was unbelievable. I never thought that something like that would come across my inbox, but it did. And it came across at a time that was, you know, very serendipitous. I was creatively stir crazy, ready for the next phase of life. And I just thought, you know what? I maybe have no business auditioning for a voiceover job, but I love Mickey. And this will be amazing. And so I decided to take a try at it. And I submitted my audition. And a few months go by. And then I finally got a phone call. And they said, "We'd love what you did. We're doing callback auditions. What part of the company do you work for?" I had to explain that I didn't work for them. And that not only did I not work for them, I wasn't in California. So I had to explain that I was in Kansas City and I would fly myself out there. Ironically, I was blocks away from Walt Disney's original animation studio in Kansas City, the Laugh-O-Gram studio. Wow. You know, Hallmark's not too far from there. I lived kind of in between. And I remember I was driving when I got the call, or I was leaving the gym. I can't remember which, but I just remember saying, I'm so close to Laugh-O-Grams. This is crazy. Anyway, long story longer. I flew myself out, auditioned in person. At that point, I was told Wayne's health wasn't any better. It was actually getting worse. And then a few more months went by. I heard nothing. It was excruciating. And then I got the news that Wayne Allwine had passed away. And I knew at that point that this whole understudy program was not going to be an understudy program anymore. And so I also was able to realize that it was probably going to be a longer process than I would have ideally hoped for. And it was a bummer because, you know, so much of what I was looking forward to was, if I was chosen, was to have the opportunity to learn from somebody, a Disney legend, no less. And so that was a real disappointment. But after some time had passed, I did get a phone call and they said, "You know, I'm sure you've heard the news, but Mickey's got work to do and we'd love to start trying you on some projects." And that's when I guess you could say commute. I started commuting from Kansas City to Burbank, California, and started recording. And it was kind of understood that it was a trial basis. They weren't committing to anything yet. They wanted to see how I did. But after two trips out there, or two jobs rather, they offered me the job. They said, "You know, it will require you relocating to California, but I'm from LA. It was a chance to move back home," which was something I always wanted to do. And yeah, I guess you could say the rest is history. So that's how I got here.
That's fantastic. So I know you mentioned that you didn't get a chance to work directly with Wayne Allwine. I'm sure, you know, you did a lot of studying and hearing his voice through your childhood. Was there anybody within the Disney studios that kind of took you under their wing to kind of teach you?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, it was a team effort and I learned that very early on. You know, I just spent the weekend with Bill Farmer, the voice of Goofy, and we do a lot of talks together and we often share that, you know, it really is a family dynamic. And I experienced that right off the bat, not only with the fellow cast members, but just the team behind them at Disney Character Voices. You know, they had lost a loved one and that was evident. And just experiencing that and seeing how affected they were by the loss of Wayne, let me know that these people were not just coworkers. They were family, they were team members, they you know, had each other's backs and they were going to do the same for me. They're going to make sure that I did the best job for them, for myself, but also for Mickey. And I don't remember ever feeling like I just had to go in there and wow them. Like I really felt like they put some faith in me, but also were there to help me out. And so in that aspect, absolutely. The writers and directors at Character Voices really kind of helped. As you mentioned, just my knowledge of Mickey at that point was a huge benefit. You know, I wasn't just somebody who thought, oh, I like Mickey, he's cute. I grew up watching the classic shorts. I grew up watching the Disneyland black and white TV series. I knew who Walt Disney was. I knew all of the history of the films he had made and the park, Disneyland. And so all of that stuff kind of, you know, filled my toolbox of awareness of who Mickey was and what needed to be brought into this role. Because, you know, Mickey was Walt, Walt is Mickey. Jimmy McDonald is quoted as telling Wayne Allwine, you know, remember, kid, you're just filling in for the boss. And I tell that to myself all the time. And I also often extend that to any cast member. You know, we're all just kind of doing our job to help preserve the legacy of Walt. And in that way, we're filling in for the boss. We're making sure that the magic he believed in, that imagination, that creative spirit of exploration lives on. So, you know, the cast members, I've become such good friends with Bill Farmer. He is everything you would hope that he would be, having voiced Goofy for, you know, gosh, I think it's 35 years or close to that now. He's a sweetheart. He's a gentleman. He is a wealth of knowledge and talent, and not shy to offer advice or help or encouragement. And he's become such a good friend, he and his whole family. And, you know, I got to know Tony Anselmo, the voice of Donald Duck, and he was a Disney animator. And so, you know, he and I kind of had a similar interest in art and Disney history. And he gave me great advice when I started out. So, yeah, there was really never any lack of advice. And then, of course, I'd be remiss to not mention Russi Taylor, who was married to Wayne Allwine. And I got to work alongside her for many years in my career. She passed away about 2 years ago now, but up to that point, she was a great advocate, somebody who was just so loving and endearing and encouraging. And whenever I needed advice, she was always there. I could just pick up the phone and ask her how Wayne would have done something, or if Wayne had encountered something that I was dealing with. And she was always happy to share that with me, sometimes in a very colorful way, because Russi was not afraid to use, you know, all kinds of words and languages. So we all miss her, but I'm just so fortunate that at the formation of my career, I had all of those people, and still have so many of them surrounding me to kind of just ensure that not only am I still learning in the role, but like the magic is still there, and it's, you know, it's a consistent thread throughout the whole process. So
no doubt. So was there any specific moment or any specific job that you were just like, wow, it just hit me, like, I am Mickey Mouse?
You know, honestly, that happens all the time. It really does, especially maybe not in the moment of a session, but if I ever hear the playback, like, you know, I could just be walking down the aisle, the toy aisle in a store, and someone presses the Mickey thing, and I'm like, that's so weird that that's me. Like, I remember recording that. Or, you know, the mall at Christmas time, and you walk past the Disney store, and there's a little Merry Christmas, everybody. I'm like, oh, that's weird. But the theme parks are the one thing that always gets me the most. You know, I'm not shy to admit I'm sappy, I'm emotional, and tears have been shed, especially when it comes to family members being with me and experiencing a project I've worked on, like a parade, or especially Fantasmic was a big deal for me. Fantasmic 2.0, as the fans call it, down at Disneyland, when we had a chance to revamp that. You know, that was, it was more than a dream come true, because it wasn't something that I necessarily dreamt of, which is true of the Mickey job. You know, I wanted to work for Disney. I've always been such a fan, but I never once thought I want to be the voice of Mickey Mouse. And I think it makes it that much more enjoyable for me that I didn't have that aspiration, because it truly was a surprise that I find myself still living in this surreal realization that I get to do it. And it's just something that it's hard to comprehend. It really is. But every project's exciting. Everything brings something new. Every time a new episode or a new TV show gets developed, it's just, everything is, it's so cool. And I feel so honored that I get to be the person to do it. I almost feel undeserving of it because it's just, like I said, I'm such a fan. I'm like, why me? But at the same time, I don't want to stop doing it. So
sure. So when you're going through the parks, because you mentioned you love Disneyland, and I'm assuming you've been to many of them around the world, if not all of them.
I've only been domestically. Can you believe it?
Wow. Okay.
Disneyland and Disney World are the only two locations I've been. My voice is in, I think it's safe to say that I've voiced something for every park around the world. Maybe not Shanghai. I can't remember. At some point I've lent my voice to projects that have been for every park around the world, but I have not been to any of the other ones. So I'm dying to go.
That's kind of surprising.
Yeah, but I grew up in LA, so Disneyland is home base for me. And then I went to school in Florida, so of course I was an annual pass holder for the Orlando Resort. So yeah, but anyway, I hijacked your question.
Oh, no, that's perfectly fine. So have you gone to the parks and just kind of surprised whoever, is friends with Mickey whenever you go up and you're like, hey, and you're talking in Mickey's voice and they're like, oh my God, it's really him. Like,
you know what? I want to say never, but that seems like a very concrete answer that I'm afraid to commit to. But I want to say that I don't remember doing that. Only because I know that they get that all the time.
Right.
And, it's funny, but even when I do the voice for people, I'll have friends or, whoever will say, oh, meet Brett. He's the voice of Mickey Mouse. Do the voice. And I'll do something. Oh, boy. And they go, oh, that's pretty cool. That sounds good. They don't get it. So you can imagine somebody who's friends with Mickey is interacting with people all day who are coming up and saying, oh boy, or oh toodles, or hot dog, or some imagination, huh? And they're probably just like, thank you. Nice to see you. So I've always kind of been aware of that, that if I was to do that, they'd probably just think, here's another one. Here's another super fan. But I have had the opportunity to meet a lot of the cast members who do lend their talents as friends with Mickey. And they're all so appreciative and they're all so great. And I think what they bring to the character is so cool and requires so much. I've had the chance to interact with them in a more personal way, we should say, as opposed to through the veils of... rubber, if I can say that without giving away too much.
Sure. So if I'm not mistaken, you were the voice of Talking Mickey, correct?
I did work on the Talking Mickey project for a long time, and it was a really cool project because, Mickey got to interact with people on a very personal level, especially in the beginning. We had a very long process, which Disney refers to as playtesting, where, you're developing a new show and you want to see how things work and what Mickey would and wouldn't say and how he could say and how he could steer the conversation or steer the interaction. And so we had a whole team that worked really close with Mickey to just see how those interactions would go. I like to say I had the opportunity to be Mickey's vocal coach during those those projects. And it was great because there's nothing like seeing somebody react when Mickey says your name, and it's a lot more than just getting a silent handshake. What I already knew, but what that project gifted me was the realization that Mickey means so much to people. And when Mickey is having a conversation with you, you're bringing to life that personal interaction like that you would have with a friend, and so people were sharing all kinds of stuff with Mickey, the highs and the lows. The burden of that responsibility kind of hit me really hard during that project. I realized that it's not just about making a voice that makes people smile. It's about making a voice that brings comfort to people, that that makes milestones more relevant in people's lives. And that's huge. I mean, I think that kind of goes back to the feelings of undeservedness or, you know, imposter syndrome that I definitely suffer with this and many aspects of my life. But, you know, it's just, Mickey is so much bigger than any one person. A lot of times people would be like, but, you know, you're a celebrity. And I'm like, I am not a celebrity. Mickey Mouse is a celebrity. I am not. I am one of the cogs in the wheel that keeps Mickey going. So that project just really kind of brought that to light to me, or brought that to light for me, because it was such a cool experience to watch the interaction. Oddly enough, you know, what was learned over the years of that project and that show going live is that people, and this definitely speaks to the power of Mickey, guests didn't necessarily experience a difference when it was talking Mickey and when it was pantomime Mickey, because to them, even if it was pantomime, they still got that loving interaction that they were seeking. And again, a testament to the cast members who are friends with Mickey. I mean, that's amazing that you can walk away from an interaction that had no words, no language, and you still feel everything you were hoping to. And then you get the chance to talk to Mickey and exchange words, and you leave feeling the same. I just thought that was such a weird realization that you didn't necessarily need the words to communicate all those things that Mickey means to people. So anyway, it's still one of the coolest things I ever did. Best experiences during that time, you know, I got to be involved in the rededication of Disney California Adventure in California, the opening of the Alani, a Disney resort and spa in on Oahu. So yes, so many cool things with that project. I do hope that there get to be more live Mickey performances in the future of my career, because it was a really cool experience.
Sure. No, that sounds awesome. So kind of staying in the Disney parks, I won't make you pick between the two. Okay. So I'll focus more on your home park of Disneyland. What is your absolute favorite thing to do when you go visit the parks?
This is either going to make me sound like a nerd, a grandpa, or just a really cool guy. But my favorite thing to do, honestly, is to just ride the train and take the Grand Circle Tour. I love steam trains. I love railroading. And what I love specifically about the Disneyland or the Walt Disney World Railroad is that when you're on that train and you're riding around, you know, with the view looking inside the park, you're just like getting this great vantage point of everything happening within that berm, all the magic. And I think it's true, you know, like the plaques that when you enter those parks, either Magic Kingdom or Disneyland, say to, you know, when you enter here, you're leaving reality essentially, and you're entering the worlds of adventure. I'm going to butcher it, but you know what I mean? Fantasy, tomorrow, I should look that up before I do podcasts. But it's so true, because even as a kid, I remember Disneyland was my favorite place because I got to leave everything behind. I left all the anxiety about school or chores or whatever it was that was bothering me. And I just got to have fun and immerse myself in this creative environment. And so for me, hopping on the train, it's just like, I get that vantage point. And that's why I loved the old Disneyland TV shows and specials, is because they were usually, you know, they're essentially like big hour-long advertisements for the parks, but it was so cool to get a glimpse of the Jungle Cruise and the Rivers of America and the Mine Train or whatever it was that they highlighted. And you just kind of get this snapshot of everything. But if I'm to go beyond trains, I would say that, you know, I am a grandpa, because I just love walking around the park. I love walking around the park. I love all the visual stimulation. I love picking out all the design details. I'm, you know, still a designer. So that's always appealing to me. I love the background music. I love all of it. If you're asking for an attraction though, I will always go to Haunted Mansion and Pirates of the Caribbean being my two favorite attractions. To me, they are quintessential Disney theme park magic at its finest, original stories, immersive environments, audio animatronics that still hold up to this day. So yeah, that was a very long answer to your short question, but
that's I'm a talker, totally fine. No, I'm all on board for that. And do you ever kind of get caught up in the pirates at Walt Disney World compared to Disneyland, like which is better?
Oh, I mean, I definitely have my opinion. I don't know if I should share it because I'll lose an audience. No, I'm just joking. I have to say that that Disneyland Pirates has always been my favorite, because we have two waterfalls, but also because I'm such a stickler for the history behind it and just knowing it's the original. But I have a great affinity for the Magic Kingdom Pirates because, like I said, annual pass holder for 4 years, going to the park during college. So I probably have equal ridership on both coasts. So they each bring something different.
Sure. I personally can't even speak to Disneyland. I've only heard. I've never been to Disneyland. Okay. But I did for a year. I had an annual pass at Walt Disney World. So I've gone plenty of times there. But I just wanted to get your perspective on that. So that's really cool.
Yeah, it's a different, I mean, and I've heard, you know, it's funny because when they developed Magic Kingdom, they weren't going to put in a pirates because they didn't think that the Southern audience would be interested in a story about pirates in the Caribbean. They're like, that's your backyard, basically. Right. But turns out people expected that at Disney. So it has a different, you know, a different cue and a different flair in terms of the intro to it versus the Louisiana Bayou that you enter in at Disneyland. It's almost here or there. I don't know. Disneyland. And my answer is Disneyland.
Okay.
You'll experience it someday.
Yeah, I hope so. So it's kind of funny because I find a lot of parallels between your story and my story because I'm a designer as well.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting how you say you just like kind of take it in and just the architecture, the overall design of the parks, because that's what I love to do as well. That's my favorite thing about going to Disney World. And what my question is here is, how does that influence your voice acting career, just being a designer and seeing things a little bit differently?
That's a great question that I'm not sure I've been asked before. You know, I guess specifically when it comes to Mickey, I often get asked, like, do I think in Mickey's voice all the time? Or like, what do I picture when I voice Mickey? But I think it's because of that designer eye and that, you know, design aesthetic that I picture Mickey the way, you know, like I picture this little 2D rough animated Mickey bouncing around in my head. And I'm guilty of graffitiing all over my scripts because when we're recording, I'm always doodling Mickey. You know, with a facial expression that kind of emulates whatever the mood is or the line is that we're trying to capture. So I think just having an awareness of, you know, that sensation of putting pencil to paper and the magic of a few circles coming to life and forming Mickey's head really kind of just in my mind, it like connects me with the character. It sounds a little hokey, but I think having that awareness is super helpful. And also just the way that extends to my imaginative viewpoint, you know, when we do a project that's for the park, like I have a really vivid picture of where that's going to take place. You know, they can say, oh, this is a cavalcade that's going down, Adventureland and Magic Kingdom, and like I can go there because I have those snapshots because I've been like you walking around soaking it all in, or I've been flipping through the books with pictures of them for years.
Absolutely.
And so I think that helps. It's funny because for the longest time I was doing cruise ship shows and I had never been on a Disney cruise, so I was kind of basing it off of pictures I'd seen. And I finally had the chance to go on, and I've been on several Disney cruises now, and it makes such a difference to me performing for a Disney cruise show, having like now that I know what the deck looks like, where people are going for the sail away of parties. You know, it's like, oh, now I have that experience to kind of form the venue and know what Mickey is playing to. It makes such a difference. It really does.
That's awesome. So when you're seeing this little 2D Mickey in your head, what style is he in?
Oh, he's Freddie Moore Mickey all the way. He's, you know, Mickey from The Pointer, pupiled eyes, little round, little squishy tummy. That's my favorite. I always say that my two favorite Mickey cartoons are either The Brave Little Taylor or The Pointer. I love the story and the performance of Walt in The Brave Little Taylor, but I love The Pointer because of the art style. You know, that was the first time Mickey showed up with pupils in a short, and I love that. I've always gravitated towards that Freddie Moore Mickey. I think he just captured this warmth, this character design that lends itself to so much movement, and there's just something about it that is so timeless to me. It's funny because, you know, that was back in the 40s, but it's just, when I see that, I'm like, that's Mickey. You know, we see pie-eyed Mickey a lot too, and there's something really appealing about that, but I'm like, no, you don't get the same interaction you get with the pupils. You know, Disney right. animators will always tell you, like, drawing the eyes is one of the most important things on a character, because that's where we connect, is looking at each other's eyes, and the same goes for a character. And so I'm like, why wouldn't Mickey have pupils?
So I'm assuming you did a lot of drawing of Disney characters when you were younger. And it's funny because I know I keep relating it back to my scenario too. I would draw Mickey all the time when I was younger, and he was always the hardest character to draw, in my opinion. Did you feel that way too?
I mean, yes and no. Mickey's the most familiar character to me. And in terms of, like, you know, the three circles, his basis is pretty simple for me, but you're right, he is difficult. I mean, I think I look back at drawings I did 10 years ago and I'm like, oh gosh, no. Like, I'm still learning to draw Mickey, and every time I do, I learn a little bit more, they get a little bit better. So you're right, Mickey, he's deceivingly simple, or he's deceivingingly difficult, I guess. Is that how you'd say it? Yeah, you don't think he'd be that hard, but he actually is. Like, it's easy to draw a bad Mickey. It's hard to draw a good one.
Yes.
But yeah, it's just, it's a lot of practice, I guess.
No doubt. That's so funny. And it's also kind of funny that you kind of gravitate towards this 2D style when most of your voice characters are in the CGI 3D style.
Yeah, that's a thing I've had to kind of let go. I mean, the 3D style, those shows, they've got great content, great stories, and there's such a good appeal factor to them. I think personally, I'm just always going to gravitate towards the 2D Mickey, and I would love to voice Mickey. Oh, sorry, getting a text from my brother. Rude. I would love to voice Mickey in a 2D animated series. I just think, again, quintessential Mickey. I've had the chance to do, like, we did the 60th anniversary of Disneyland, had a special World of Color show, and Mickey was in it, and he was 2D animated. And when that little mouse came out, I got goosebumps and was so excited. I was like, oh my gosh, 2D animated Mickey. That was so cool. And actually I am going to be a part of the Mickey's getting a special documentary feature that's going to be on Disney Plus. I think awesome. It's releasing in November, but don't quote me on that. I got to voice Mickey then, and I know they're going to, Eric Goldberg actually is going to animate Mickey in two dimension for that special. So I can't wait to see that. I just think there's something so appealing about the 2D animation ability to squash and stretch, and it just lends itself to some exaggerations that I know 3D animation is totally capable of, but I think in the context of some of the quicker production timelines that TV shows require when you're doing 3D, they don't always get that the same finesse that maybe a feature does. So, anyway, I would love. I'm still hoping for the day they say we're doing a Mickey feature and it's going to be all 2D and it's going to be in traditional Freddie Moore style. I'll be ecstatic.
Oh, that would be so cool. That would be so cool. Just from a fan standpoint, that would be amazing. Oh
yeah, man. I've been pushing for that for years.
That would be spectacular. Spectacular. So, do you ever have you met Chris Diamantopoulos, who voices the Mickey for the Mickey shorts, because you don't do that voice. Do you guys ever just kind of like talk back and forth just as Mickey?
I have not had the opportunity to meet Chris. Okay. Bill Farmer has, since he works on that show. And he's communicated to me that he's a really nice guy. But no, I haven't had the chance. It's funny. We don't ever really get to interact even with the people that are on the cast members on our show, the shows that we're working on, because we go in independently. You know, we used to pre-COVID, you'd have the chance to run into each other when you're like coming or going in a studio. But that doesn't even happen anymore. Now they stagger us. So we're coming in 15, 30 minutes, apart. So, no, have not had that chance. I take Bill Farmer's word that I'm sure he's a fantastic guy. Has given his own take to Mickey, which is great. He's, you know, him and Paul Rudish have created a whole other little universe of Mickey that I think is that a lot of fans appreciate. So that's pretty cool. You know, Mickey, like I said, Mickey's bigger than one person.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, you know, it's bringing magic to different people and different styles. And it's just so spectacular how Disney just continues to evolve the character as time has gone on.
Absolutely.
So going off of that a little bit, kind of taking a step back as well, because I don't think we touched on it. How did you actually find out that you could do a Mickey voice?
I wish I had like this moment in time where I could tell you. I discovered it then. I don't really remember. I just know that when I was really young, my grandfather did a Donald Duck voice. It wasn't, you know, probably up to my standards today, but as a kid, I thought that's cool. And I tried to do it. I had this book that was written for, I want to say, the 30th anniversary of Donald, and Clarence Nash had written a little page on it that outlined how to make the voice of Donald Duck. And I would read that thing and I would try and I would try and I would try and I could not get it to work. All I could do was I couldn't say any words. So at some point I decided, you know what? I can't do Donald. So I'm going to try and do Mickey. He's my favorite character anyway. And I must have started practicing or doing my Mickey impression at that point. But when I really remember performing Mickey's voice is when we came home from a trip to Disneyland with the Fantasmic soundtrack. And I started listening to it all the time. And in doing so, I was, emulating the characters I was listening to. Like I was singing along or talking along with them. And I just remember one day thinking, oh, I actually can kind of get that Mickey sound, that falsetto sound kind of works for me. Started emulating all the voices in the Fantasmic soundtrack and realized that my falsetto kind of sounded like Mickey. And I think that's when I just kind of started doing it more often. And it was really just something I did if I was listening to Fantasmic or if a friend was making fun of the fact that I was a big Disney fan, I would just usually give them an oh boy. And that was my way of like saying, yep, you're right. I'm a huge Disney fan. Look at me. Ha ha ha. Oh boy. And that's really all I said. And then when we would go to Disney parks in college, of course you have to talk like Mickey a little bit when you're there. Like you were asking about talking with friends of Mickey and, you know, going up to the performers and everyone does that. I probably did it then. Now that I'm thinking about it, if I'm being real honest, I probably did do it before I ever got cast. I've actually forgotten the question. When did I start doing the voice? It just was kind of something that evolved over time. I was just doing it. And like I said, never really thought I was practicing for a career. I just thought it was a funny thing to do. And even when I got that audition info, I wasn't sure if I could talk like Mickey for an entire sentence, let alone an entire show. I really didn't know. I thought, well, here we go. Here's the audition. So I'll try this. And then when I did my callback auditions and it was, you know, 4, 5, 6 pages worth of Mickey, I was like, ooh, I hope I can do it. I remember at that point, I would literally take a sip of water in between every line because it was like this nervous tick. I had to lubricate the vocal cords. I wasn't sure if it would work. It's a weird looking back on that and thinking how unsure I was and not even sure what the true origin story is. It just kind of always was.
That's so crazy how it went almost full circle for you, where you were talking about the Fantasmic soundtrack and then you get to literally voice Mickey in Fantasmic 2.0. Like that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the most surreal moments of my life, to be standing on the banks of Rivers of America and hearing my own voice come out of those speakers during that performance. It's, you know, that was something I'll never forget. Never forget.
Absolutely. Wow, that's just so crazy. Just like, sorry for like fixating, but that's just, it's so awesome just to hear how it came about for you.
It's very weird, and I, you know, I feel very blessed that my life has included several of those moments where, if it's not Mickey, it's something else where, you know, I've really just kind of discovered this, I don't want to, power implies that it's something I did, but it's this idea that when you truly pursue things you're passionate about, or when you put your energy towards the things that make you the most happy, you know, life has a way of rewarding you with moments like that, where you stand on the banks of the Rivers of America and hear some imagination, huh? And it's you, and you go, holy crap, I was 11 years old watching this show, you know, thinking that it was the coolest thing in the world. And now I'm a part of it. Like, it just, there's moments in my life where it literally just feels like this does not compute. And I think the hardest thing in those moments is to say, this does not compute, but I'm going to accept it, celebrate it, and I'm just gonna keep going forward, because my introvert self wants to go, this is too good to be true, it's going to implode, I have to like hunker down and not do anything ever again because it's too cool. Thankfully, I haven't listened to that voice yet, because I'm crazy and I take on too many things. But you know, there is a tendency to face those life moments and be like, holy crap, this is too good to be true. And Mickey has been the vehicle for many of those events, for sure.
And you've just embodied his character so well over the past almost 12 years, correct?
Over 12 years at this point. Over 12 years. Yeah, it was 12 years in June. So
okay, yeah.
We're past June, aren't we?
So yeah, that's crazy. It feels like just yesterday that you were taking over, but no.
Trust me, I know. I know.
I'm sure it's even crazier for you.
It's scary to think how fast the next 10 years are going to go.
Do you see yourself voicing Mickey really until you can't?
Yes. I mean, I love this character. I love this role. I hope to have the opportunity to do it as long as I can. But the last thing I want to do is hold on to this role. After it's, you know, detrimental to Mickey's consistency or success, you know, I'm fourth voice. There's going to be a fifth official voice. I really would love to get to a point in my career where I'm able to recognize the opportunity to start having an understudy to teach somebody what I've learned, so that Mickey is just that much more stronger going forward, you know, give somebody the opportunity that I unfortunately didn't get. So I don't know what that looks like. I don't know. Hopefully I'll get to a point where maybe I'm just ready to retire and pursue other things. I hope I get the chance to make that decision. But until then, I'm just going to keep going forward. You know, it was brought up this talking to Bill Farmer this week. You know, he was like, you were 26 when you started this. And looking back now, I'm like, this seems really young to start a job like this. So hopefully that means I've got a lot of years left that I can do it and can sustain it and continue to have fun. But yeah, you know, I don't have an exit strategy at this point. I'm just going to keep going as long as I can, with the hope that Mickey and me get along for years to come, I guess.
Well, I'm so glad to hear that, because I know you just bring so much joy and happiness to so many people, so many kids with all of the stuff that you do. So it's just been spectacular to be able to talk with you today and just appreciate this like crazy. Like I never thought this was going to happen for the show, and I'm just so appreciative.
Oh, I'm ecstatic to be here. I'm glad we could have the chat. Like I said, for the love of Mouse, you have to have Mickey on here. So no, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to talk about Mickey and Disney magic and imagination and dreams and all that stuff, you know, forever and always. So thanks for having me. This has been fun.
I appreciate it. So I'm aware that you have your own design business, and if you want to plug that, if you want to plug where people can connect with you on social media, by all means.
Sure. Yeah, you know, I'm admittedly the worst social media person ever, but I'm trying to get better at it. You can always follow along with me and my Mickey adventures or my personal adventures on my Instagram, which is Brett_Iwan. That's 1T, B-R-E-T underscore I-W-A-N. My design business is called Bungalow Modern. And, you know, it kind of takes on a life of its own. It's home renovation, it's antique renovation, it's the crazy projects I take on, like restoring a 1900s chuck wagon or building a steam locomotive, which I've decided to take on the task of doing. Also developing, you know, a property with a railroad. Like, there's just all kinds of crazy things going on. But if it's anything vintage or design, you're going to find it on the Bungalow Modern Instagram there. So yeah, follow along. I'm crazy. You're guaranteed to get some kind of adventure out of it.
Well, thank you again so much for joining us, Mr. Brett Iwan, the official voice of Mickey Mouse. I had such a blast talking with you. Thank you again.
Me too. Thanks for having me. This was fun.
I can't thank Mr. Iwan enough for coming onto the show and speaking with me. I had an absolute blast talking with him about all of his Disney experiences. Hearing his story about how he became the official voice of Mickey Mouse was just so, so fun to hear. And if you're so inclined, he does have a new apparel line or merchandise line available on Shop Disney. This was released after I was able to speak with him, so I'm a little bummed about that. But you can find his original artwork on some stuff called the MM Script Series by Brett Iwan on Shop Disney, also available at Disney Style in Disney Springs. So there's some backpacks, hoodies. Make sure to check that out if you haven't done so already. That's super cool that he was able to make his own line of merchandise. That's awesome, with some Mickey Mouse drawings that he has done himself. So directly relating to the topics of this episode and our conversation. So thank you all for listening. If you haven't done so already, please make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app. We will have so much more Disney content coming in the future. We absolutely love doing this show and can't wait for the next 50 episodes that we're able to bring to you. I also want to remind you, if you don't do so already, please make sure to follow us on all of our social media accounts. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, and YouTube by searching Love of the Mouse Multimedia or at LOTM Multimedia. You can also visit our website, loveofthemousepodcast.com, and there you'll find all of our previous and future episodes, different blog posts that we've written, as well as a ton of other Disney-based content. In addition to our full portfolio of work that we've created to help other Disney podcasts and creators in the Disney community. So once again, can't thank Mr. Iwan enough. We hope you've enjoyed listening to the Love of the Mouse podcast. Until you hear us again, thank you and good night.